Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Why this war between the powerful and the rest of humanity? Do we have to just go on accepting the destruction of the living systems in order to maintain a living economy? Will the people of the world continue to just see their lives torn up? Are we kidding ourselves that they don't understand the game? Is good old American democracy undercut by the corporatocracy? We explore ways to think our way into the world we want. We now continue our discussion with best-selling author John Perkins about his role as an economic hitman.
Of course, it has led to around the world in order to support the corporations and then also the consumerist societies that we benefit from. I mean, we live in an age of miracles. I'm never going to deny that. I love all of my toys, and we're extremely lucky. Competition and capitalism has led to a miraculous world. But unfortunately, the world is limited, and the resources as well are limited. And part of your story tells the story of how the corporations, in order to make sure that they have access to those resources, are involved in various forms of economic entrapment so that those resources become available to feed or support this corporatocracy. But let's look out into the future, because now we also, and this is a strange irony, is that as development really reaches out into the farther realms, the desire and the demand for consumerist items is going to put even much greater stress on the living systems. How are these people facing that future?
Well, look, Sidney, I think we know two things, two very important things right now. We know from history that empires never last; they collapse, and they collapse violently. And this one will too. There's no question about it. And we also know that we've done an experiment since let's say World War II, although it began earlier. And that experiment really hasn't worked. So today we find ourselves, you and I, living in a country that has about 5% of the world's population, consumes about 25% of the resources, and creates close to 30% of the serious pollution on the planet. That's not a replicable model. We talk about taking this out to the world, you know, letting China become like us and India. You can't do that. You can't go, you know, 5% of the world's people using 25% of the resources, creating 30% of the pollution. You can't spread that model. It doesn't work. It's a failed experiment. And yes, we may be the wealthiest people in the history of the world. We may have all the toys that you mentioned, but we're not a very happy people. If you look at our social statistics around suicide and drug abuse and divorce and incarceration and murder, they're pretty bad. All our wealth hasn't really created a happy society here. So we know these two things. We've created a non-replicable model, and probably one we really wouldn't want to replicate anyway, and one that can't continue. And we've created an empire, and empires never last. So I think what we know is that in the next 30 years or so, something's going to collapse here, and it's going to collapse drastically and violently. The alternative is to change it now. And perhaps the good news is that this empire and this model has been created by a very compassionate people. I'd like to think of it that way. And the people who have a philosophy of life that really reflects the philosophies of people from all over the world. After all, our population comes from all over the world. The ideas expressed in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution came from philosophers all over the world, and our very government system came from the indigenous people of North America. They were the model. So we have a global model here, and it's time to take it back out to the world. It's time to really show our compassion and to say to the world, look, we want life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everyone around the world. And a government of the people, for the people, by the people, not of the corporation, for the corporation, and by the corporation. This is what we want to take out to the world. Let the world have it. And the first step in doing that, actually, is just reining in this corporatocracy and saying, stop exploiting these people. I think we're poised at a time now, and all the indigenous cultures tell us that we've reached this time in history with a tremendous potential for change. So we are here at this unique time. You and I are very fortunate to be alive here and able to speak out on this, because we're at this time where amazing changes can happen. We have all the resources, the financial resources, the creativity resources, the mental resources available to us to really create a new paradigm unlike anything the world's ever seen before. And I think we need to do that. If we don't do it, we're going to collapse.
Well, power is rarely ever given away. And those in power right now, what you refer to as the corporatocracy, and perhaps on even a larger scale, the globalizing forces, which actually extend very far, they kind of see this vision as sort of a threat, which certainly it's not from our perspective. How do we begin to create a truce?
Well, the real threat is not to do anything. The real weapons of mass destruction out there today are environmental catastrophe and extreme poverty around the world. Those are our real weapons of mass destruction. And I think we really need to recognize that. I agree with you that the change is not going to come from the top. It's going to come from us, and it always has. The American Revolution came from the people. It was a revolution of the people. There had to be certain leaders that started it, the guys like Tom Paine that wrote about it, and George Washington who said, well, I'll form a military. And all of those men, incidentally, were terrorists. They were traitors to their own government, the King of England, and they stuck their heads in nooses. If we'd lost the revolution, they all would have been hanged. It's really time that we get together and do that today. And there's a lot of people sitting on top of corporations and a lot of wealthy people, George Soros, for example, is one example, who are saying very similar things, like George Washington. This is not just about the rebellion of the poor or the middle class. Every major executive that I know is worried about the future for his kids. But I think we all really need to speak out. And when we speak out and when we join civil movements and social movements, things change. Things happen. 100 years ago, women couldn't vote in this country. 30 years ago, blacks couldn't ride on the same bus as whites in many parts of the South. 20 years ago, the bald eagle was practically extinct. We create tremendous changes when we set our minds to it. This is a change that we've not tried to create before. We're saying we need to change the way society looks at itself and the world around it and the way we view economics. We've not tried to do that before. We need now to set our minds on this task and make it happen, as we have done in so many other areas throughout the past centuries.
I think it's obvious from your experience and many other folks' experience that to try to take on this type of power is very often, it can be literally dangerous. It can be very ineffective, and I don't know that fighting it makes any sense whatsoever. So that's where you in particular and many folks like myself are working to really just change the way we look at the whole thing, to kind of pull ourselves back from this, what we imagine to be the reality, and to start to recraft a new reality. That's really how we get around this. That's what happened with the creation of the United States, America, for example, is just a whole new way of thinking. And that certainly is where your work today, your shape-shifting concepts, are moving forward. Let's explore that a bit. Give us some ideas. First of all, tell us about shape-shifting and some of the other projects that you're working in.
Well, shape-shifting really is about transformation. And it's a term that's used by shamans and indigenous cultures who I spent a lot of time working with and writing other books about. And it's really about transformation of many different kinds. So really what we're looking for here is a shape-shift. I mean, I think my new book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, is as much about shape-shifting as any of the shamanic books, but it's looking at the things I've talked about here, where we really need to shape-shift our attitudes toward the world and the environment. And the concept of shape-shifting says that, basically, the title of another book of mine, The World is As You Dream It, that when we have a vision of something that we want in life, as individuals or as a society, and we put our intent on making that vision happen, and we give it energy in many different forms, it happens. And we've seen this happen. The indigenous people tell us that if they look at what we've created here in the United States and say, you know, you guys had a dream of material success, big buildings and heavy industry and lots of cars, and you gave it energy, you made it happen. It's now happened. But now you're realizing that it's time to change that. It's not bringing you any longer, maybe it did once, but it's not any longer bringing you what you need, and in fact, it's turning destructive. It's turning in on itself. It's eating itself, the system. So you need to change your dream and give the new dream energy. And that's really what shape-shifting is about, and it holds out great hope. I mean, I think we all know that if we all get together on this and we decide we want to create a new way of living and of envisioning ourselves and our relationship to the rest of the world, then we'll do it, and we'll give it that energy.
John, give us some of your visions. You really spent a lot of time thinking about this. This is your job. This is your mission. This is your passion. You're a very fortunate person to be able to really focus on that. So share some of those visions that have come to you, because you know what? We need to just plain put them out there and share them.
Yes. Yeah, I do feel very blessed to be in this position, frankly, and to be alive at this point in history, which I think is very critical. And everybody listening came in at this time in history for a reason. And we are at a very special time in history, and it's time to move this thing forward. Well, I think, you know, what we have today is a world that's very small, really. The tentacles of the corporatocracy reaches all over the planet and sucks it dry of its resources. One of my visions is to change the flow there. Let's reach out, let's use these same tentacles, these same networks we've created through our corporations and the World Bank and other organizations to reach out and send compassion out to the world and to send real techniques out to help starving people feed themselves. 24,000 people die every single day from lack of nourishment. 30,000 children die every single day from curable diseases because they don't get medicine. We can change that. And we need to. I'm not opposed to foreign aid at all when it's used altruistically, and it can be. It can be done to really help the poorest of the poor pull themselves up by their bootstraps. We did this in a couple of programs that I worked in as an economic hitman. We did it in Panama, for example. And I know it works. So my vision is to, it's a very large vision, is to reverse these tentacles, to send out compassion and to set an example for the world and to create an atmosphere in the world where everybody can have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I believe we're right on the verge of that happening. You know, when the tsunami struck, Coca-Cola got right in there immediately and sent millions of bottles of water to those devastated areas. What if we all insisted, we who buy from Nike, Coca-Cola, and McDonald's, that those organizations make sure that nobody in the world goes without clothes, food, or water. Those three organizations, and if they committed to that, then their competitors would have to go along with it, and they could make that happen. Wouldn't that be novel and beautiful and wonderful? And in the long run, the best thing for the survival of those organizations, too. Corporations should not be about paying executives huge salaries. The average right now is 475 times the average employee in those corporations. That's ridiculous. They should not be about giving investors windfall profits. Corporations should be about making a good life for their employees, and for their customers and their suppliers.
That's a beautiful beginning. It certainly is. And one of the questions I'd love to ask you is, what is the economic fix? How do we economically? Because one of the aspects of your book, of course, is the fact that you let us know that we're kind of caught in this sense of reality of what America is about, very much created as a part of the media that serves the consumerist world. How do we challenge that media? How do we find a means to get this message out in an effective way when the media is so centralized?
Well, you're doing it, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And one of the things that's amazed me in the past, my book came out in November, early November, so however long that's been. One of the things that's amazed me is it's been on the bestseller list of all the major newspapers in the country, all the major media, and not one of them, of the major ones, has reviewed it or written an article about it. And yet, it continues to be a bestseller. And every single day, I talk to 5, 7, 10 radio stations like I'm talking to you now. And they're getting through to millions and millions of people. I think the mainstream media, the big networks that are owned by the big corporations and depend on the big corporations to, for their advertising, who won't touch these kinds of topics, have basically become entertainment. You watch the morning shows in the morning, CBS, ABC, NBC, I don't care which one, they're just entertainment. They never go into depth. If somebody's on, they're only on for a couple of minutes. You and I are talking for, half an hour or something? We're talking pretty in-depth here. They become entertainment. But there's another whole segment of the media that's out there, like you, Sydney, who are really delving, and there's a lot of you, and you're getting through to a lot of people. And there's the internet, which gets through to tremendous numbers of people. My publisher just put a blog up on my book, and my God, the hits we're getting on it. So we're getting through. I think the whole media system is totally changed in this country, and most of us don't even really realize it yet, although we may be part of it. But very soon, that's going to become very apparent to everyone.
I believe it's critical, and that's what the Wild Side News is about, that we literally create our own media. We just plain do create our own, along with the ideas and the visions, and as well the alternative energy systems and the products that will help sustainability. We need to unite that all into a unified media, because there's so many people like we're talking about here who are hungry, who want this message, who want this truth, who are happy to become part of this emerging a better future. And I'm very hopeful. I actually am very hopeful. I believe that some of the old systems are old systems now, and that there's whole new systems that are achieving expediency and credibility and reality and are going to unify in a vision that begins to work. And then the other trick, and maybe you can help us out here, how do we economically empower this new vision?
Well, I'm not so worried about the economics. It's been my experience that when we have a strong vision, everything else follows. I mean, that sounds simplistic, but it's really been my experience. I created an alternative energy company the same way. Getting this book out, which, every major publisher in the country turned my book down. And a very bold, small publisher from San Francisco, Barrett Kohler, published it. And now they're doing really, really well with it. And we just sold the paperback rights, and all the major publishers were stumbling over themselves to get it.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks. But the point being that, I wrote the book because I believed in it, because I knew it had to be written, and everything else fell into place. I really think that happened, Sydney. So I think when we have the vision of what it is we want, the economics will come. They will fall into place. The right people will step forward at the right time. You can only go forward with this whole process if you have a certain amount of faith that the right thing will happen at the right time. And I have absolute faith in that. I think we've come to this position that we're in for very good reasons, and we're going to move forward for very good reasons. And I really believe that part of shape-shifting is when you give it the energy, then things begin to fall into place. And it's certainly been my experience. I'm 60 years old, and I can say that's been my experience throughout life. The only times I've had trouble is when I kind of fought the system, when I haven't believed in that, when I focused on the small parts. I focused on the financing of something rather than the something itself. And that's always a mistake. I finance big alternative energy plants, and what I learned from the very beginning, you don't go after the financing, you go after the plant. You envision the plant, and you put together all the things that need to go into that plant. You come up with a really good program, and then the financing comes into place.
I believe the dream is actually beginning to develop critical mass, and that's what we need. And I totally agree with virtually everything. We haven't even really talked about the nature of your book. In a sense, we haven't. So I encourage everybody to go out there, because it is a terrific read. And the types of things that we've talked about deal with some of the essence, but actually the nuts and bolts are an amazing story. John, when people want to find out more specifically about you and your mission and how you work, and perhaps participate in some of the work that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do so?
Go to my website, johnperkins.org, and the website of the nonprofit I created and chair, which is dreamchange.org. And there's a new website coming up, which is called economichitman.com, that my publisher just put together. I just saw it today. It's amazing, but I don't think it's actually up yet. I think I have a sneak preview. So go to johnperkins.org and dreamchange.org. Oh, and I'd also like to just add, Sydney,
sure,
that I'm traveling a lot and speaking, and when I go to speak, I'd love to get questions from people. So if people have questions for me, look at those websites. They both have my schedule. Come join me and ask questions.
Fabulous. That's actually a question I was going to ask you. I'm just curious, because it's amazing how much we learn when you write a book like this, and then you go out and you put it out to the public, and they come back with their questions.
Oh.
Has there been a question that just has set you back and said, boy, I can launch with that?
there's been a whole lot of questions and comments that have really inspired me to move forward with more and perhaps write another book and continue on this process. And it's been particularly encouraging for me to do college campuses. And whenever I give a talk at a college campus to several hundred or thousand people, whatever, before that I try to have dinner and or lunch with smaller groups of students and hear their story. And I say, I'm going to tell mine in a couple of hours. You'll hear that. Now I want to hear yours. Let's go around the table. And incredible things. And I can't really say there's been one question, but what I'm hearing is tremendous optimism, discouragement over what we've done in the past, a great need to know about that and to understand it and put it behind us and move forward with the future.
The youth is the future. The old guard will pass away. That's the truth, too.
And we're on our way out.
That's right. So that is the future, and that's very hopeful. John, any idea where you're going to be in the future? Let's say in the next month ahead, where might people be able to...
Well, I'm going to be in... I'm on my way to Texas this weekend, and then I go to California and Colorado and New York and New England. I'm all over. Just go to johnperkins.org or dreamchange.org, and it's all on those two sites.
John Perkins, I'm honored to have you on. You're a warrior. You're a courageous man. I wish you health, and you already have your wealth, and that's fabulous. And I also keep this microphone open to you anytime on the Voice of the Earth to share your voice and your wisdom. Thank you, John Perkins, for joining us.
You're welcome, Sydney, and I want to thank you because what you're doing is what's really protecting democracy, and I deeply appreciate a program like yours and protecting the environment.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Our discussion today was about history, outcomes, and consequences. But I assure you, the book is filled with details and names and dates, and the truth that binds it all together. Get Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, published by Barrett Kohler. You can purchase it from the Wildside News Bookstore. And then, as they say in the craft, do the necessary. The truth continues each week on your Voice of the Earth. When we continue, we hear some of the best as we bring you the wonders and wisdom of our many guests who speak to you each week when the Wild Side News continues.